The challenge of changing some hearts and minds. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hello out there in WLRY land, and hello, Barry, again today. Glad to be with you.
Well, good to be with you too, Charles. And yeah, we're still here, even after yesterday's program and my rant. We're still here and we're still talking. And yes, we're going to still be talking about the 40th observance of the Roe versus Wade decision, Chuck, because we talked about yesterday of us putting our efforts into changing the hearts and minds of abortion-minded women. Well, there are some other folks whose hearts and minds really could stand some changing, and we're going to talk about a couple of those today, but I'm thinking that it's going to be a pretty significant challenge to try to change the hearts and minds of these folks.
Oh, well, it's going to be a real challenge because, Barry, there are none so deceived as those who are self-deceived, and there is a lot of self-deception as pointed out in this article. It exposes something that we've been saying now for years and years and years and years, and the other side denied, 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 denied. But now we're beginning to see that that facade is cracking, and they're saying, yes, you were right all along, but it doesn't matter because we have the people on our side.
Right. What we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is an article from Salon.com. Now, Salon is probably one of the more liberal online journals out there, and this article is no exception. It's written by a lady by the name of Mary Elizabeth Williams, and it was written last Wednesday afternoon, and it's titled, So What If Abortion Ends Life? Now, Chuck, just from the title alone, you know kind of what you're dealing with here, but Miss Williams actually just flat out comes right out and says it, that, yeah, I know that it's a life, and I've had children, and I knew through my pregnancies that I was carrying a human life inside of me. It doesn't make me less solidly pro-choice. What do we do with thinking like that, Charles?
Well, you can't do anything with it because this is an ideology. It's not a clearly thought out position based on some kind of solid worldview. This is someone who has centered themselves. Their entire worldview pivots around this idea of quote unquote reproductive freedom. It's the idea that I am sovereign and supreme inside my sovereignty of my body. And this is this idea that, and again, it's a libertarian idea that many libertarians, not all by any means. I actually heard a libertarian the other day make an argument completely opposite this, but it's a libertarian argument that a fetus is an invader and that you have the right to defend yourself against an invader.
That's probably the argument that basically chilled me to libertarianism right out of the gate.
Exactly. Exactly. Me as well. I've always been pro-life, even when people that I was very close to in my family sort of made noises that they were pro-choice. I can remember being instinctively, I hate that word, by the way, pro-choice. It's not pro-choice. It's pro-abortion. There is no such thing as pro-choice. There's been an argument that's gone around for years and years. Well, I don't really want any abortions to happen, but I don't want to take away the right to have them. That's sort of like saying, I think people should be allowed to rob banks if they want to. I'm not really for it, but it shouldn't be illegal. Well, the answer to that is, if you're not against robbing banks, you're making an argument for robbing banks. Robbing banks is a bad thing. And if you're saying, well, we shouldn't really punish anyone who really wants to rob a bank because, after all, they may have their reasons for wanting to do so. Well, of course, everyone has a reason for wanting to commit an abortion. But you have to ask a question, is it a good reason? And the answer is, in virtually every case, no, it's a terrible reason. I like the choice of the words that this author uses. The opening line, Barry, is really classic. Of all the diabolically clever moves, the anti-choice lobby, anti-choice, there we go. This is that choice of words. We're not pro-life, we're anti-choice. Moves the anti-choice lobby has ever pulled, surely one of the greatest has been its consistent co-opting of the word life. Life. Who wants to argue with that? Who wants to be on the side of not life? Now, again, propaganda phrasing.
Yes, indeed.
Who wants to be on the side of not life? No, no, no. If you're on the side of abortion, you're on the side of murder.
Yes, exactly right.
She knows this.
And I'm glad you used the word murder, Chuck, because some people would say, well, death. And it's like, well, no, it's worse than death. It's murder. It's intentionally taking a life. And she goes on to say that basically, well, okay, since we acknowledge that, okay, you're right, it's a life. And it's a life no matter what stage of development it's in. And it isn't less of a life prior to birth than it is after birth. And she basically says, you know, I don't want to be a logical contradiction here. So she gets really down to the point of, well, it's not a black and white issue. I can say that, but I can say, well, not all life is equal. And so then what she gets into is situational ethics.
Oh, exactly. Well, look, what is the foundation upon which she builds her argument? If you look in the second paragraph,
we endured
the highest number of abortion restrictions ever. Well, no, that's not true. Before Roe versus Wade, it was illegal in 49 states, actually 48 states. And at one point, I think 49, Colorado's always had the most liberal abortion law in the country.
Yes, it has.
And it's interesting there that that's where a lot of the work is being done to try to get a personhood amendment through. And they have made some headway. They haven't been successful. Okay. Yet support for abortion rights is at an all-time high, with 7 in 10 Americans in favor of letting Roe v. Wade stand. Barry, that is a bogus statistic. Is there still support for abortion rights? And is it at an all-time high? I think you're going to find the answer to that is no. This all is one of those battles of how you ask the question. If you couch it in terms of medical, life of the mother, all the things that we know are bogus arguments, you're going to get a kickback that, yeah, people want to make sure that women will not die from carrying children and that they will be safe and that kind of thing. And we've explained over and over and over that that's a bogus argument. If you want to hear about that, you can look back in our archives. Okay. 7 in 10 Americans are in favor of letting Roe v. Wade stand. Well, if they are, then they've changed over from about even to 7 in 10 in about the last 2 years, and I don't think that happened. Essentially, what she's framing her argument on is the idea that the people want it, and therefore it doesn't matter if it's a life. It's a matter of democracy. This is exactly what the problem is with direct democracy, Barry. This is what we've argued over and over and over again. When people start talking about direct democracy, it doesn't matter if it's a life or not. The people want it. Therefore, we can destroy that life. And all you have to do, you don't have to walk very far to put in some kind of quote-unquote inferior racial group, and all of a sudden, you're off to the races with what happened in Nazi Germany. I know groups like the ADL and that kind of thing hate it. It doesn't matter whether they hate it or not. The fact is that this is the basis of the argument. This is the basis of what happened in Nazi Germany. You get a majority of the people to say the Jews are not humans, and voila, they're not humans. Well, under a Republican form of government where the rule of law is, no, all human beings are humans. There are no inferiors. All people are viewed the same way. There is no such thing as life, and in the words of 1984, more equal life. And that's exactly what she's arguing. She's using
an
argument here that there's life and then there's life that's not quite as valuable.
Well, and she says it this way, Chuck. She says, here's the complicated reality in which we live. All life is not equal. That's a difficult thing for liberals like me to talk about, lest we wind up looking like death panel loving, kill your grandma and your precious baby stormtroopers. Well, they do, because that's exactly what they are doing. Yet a fetus can be a human life without having the same rights as the woman in whose body it resides. You know, Chuck, I wonder how she'd feel if we said, well, then let's make that argument about homosexuality.
Yeah, exactly.
How about we say that, yeah, they can be just as much of a person and love them just as much, but they shouldn't have the same rights. Oh, my goodness. Well, we would have ourselves a knockdown, drag-out ballyhoo on our hands, now wouldn't we?
You notice she doesn't give any reasons why this is the case.
Oh, well, she does. She gives her best reason, that the woman is the boss. Her life and what is right for her circumstances and her health should automatically trump the rights of the non-autonomous entity inside of her. Period. Always. Period. Chuck, that's her argument right there. Hey, it's a woman's world, baby. And if we want to get rid of that baby inside of us because it's inconveniencing us, so be it. You can't tell us we can't. That's exactly her argument.
And that's exactly what I said at the front. It's basically a radical autonomy that says, I can do anything with my body that I want. Well, in fact, you can't. This is a libertarian argument. I can sell it on the street if I want. I can abuse myself. I can throw myself on the train tracks. I can do whatever I want with my own body. And the fact is, that is not a biblical view. It's not close to a biblical view. It's not close to anything but a radical libertarian view of rights. Rights are God-given. God does not give the right to kill yourself. God did not give you the right to abuse yourself. God gave you the right to maintain your body in the best way that you can. Now, that doesn't mean that we can make exercise and diet mandatory, although we may be talking about that later in the week because there are some movements out there that the state says they can do that. But in that case, they're actually usurping the position of God. But this is an eye on a biblical worldview versus a libertarian worldview. And if you want to understand the difference between a libertarian worldview and a biblical worldview, this is a great place to look at it, because the dichotomy becomes crystal clear here. The fetus has the same rights as the mother. Exactly the same rights. Mm-hmm. The fetus has the right to survival. It has the right to be treated like a human being. And the fact is, this is what she's saying. She is admitting that it is life, but she is not admitting that it is a human being.
Yeah, and she kind of gets right down to it here. She's getting toward the end of her article. She says, my belief that life begins at conception is mine to cling to. And then if you skip on down toward the end, she says, and I would put the life of a mother over the life of a fetus every single time, even if I still need to acknowledge my conviction that the fetus is indeed a life worth sacrificing. Now, Chuck, this is extremely chilling because as much as I hate using analogies to Nazi Germany, this is the same mentality.
Well, of course it is. Now,
except for the fact that I think Hitler actually didn't see the Jews and others that he sent to the death camps as being human at all. But for this woman, this is one where this is a seared conscience, ladies and gentlemen. She can admit it. She understands the illogical nature of trying to argue otherwise, that, oh, it's less of a human or less of a life, or it's not quite there, or it's just a cluster of cells. It's a life. It's a human life at conception. But it doesn't matter because the woman's interests trumped all else.
And Barry, you know what? Again, she argues for abortion from a false premise in the same paragraph. And that is that abortion saves lives. Okay, we've talked about this before. I'm going to run over it real quick again. And then procedure in which the life of the mother is at stake and the life of the fetus is at stake. If the procedure can save the mother, but not save the child, but an attempt is made to save both, it's not an abortion. It is a failed attempt to save both mother and child. That is not an abortion. The reduction of an ectopic pregnancy in which the child has probably already died, and which will kill the mother, is not an abortion. Because the fetus in virtually all those cases cannot be saved. And some ectopics, we're talking about a tubal here, there are some pregnancies that are quote-unquote ectopics that are abdominal pregnancies, where the egg actually ends up in the abdominal cavity rather than the cervix. Well, you and I have an acquaintance who is an OBGYN who has delivered at least three of those.
Indeed. Safe
by his own count, the last time I talked to him. I haven't talked to him in a while. But the fact is, this idea that abortion, quote-unquote, saves lives, no, it does not. This is an abuse of the term. And we shouldn't be shocked, because anyone who would take the position that it's okay to kill a life, and at the bottom she finally admits the humanity of the fetus, I don't think she really takes that to heart. But she admits the humanity of the fetus. Anybody who would take the idea that it's okay to kill a fellow human being because you're the boss wouldn't be afraid to lie or to twist the facts, to twist your viewpoint at all, I don't think. So, I'm looking at the clock, Barry.
Yes.
We
again,
are out.
Again, time is not our friend.
No, it's not. So, all we can say is join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.